yet another exciting episode of National Boodle Radio. False start. We just had a false start, but we are going. And for those of you who like the show, go to republicbroadcasting.org and go to the archives section and look at the National Boodle Journal Report from Friday, last week, the 4th of October, and listen to me, yours truly, substituting for John Stadmiller. We had some interesting callers. That was an interesting show. And while you're at it, please contribute to RBN. Keep free speech alive. Last place in the world with free speech. And then also go over to nationalbugle.com. It is the high holidays. Shalom, y'all. And you want to download the Kosher Certified app to make sure that you know whether your food is kosher certified or not. It's the way you know. We all want to know about kosher certification, whether it's our food, whether it's the politicians. We want to know about kosher certification. So download the app. Download one for your friend for the high holidays. Shalom. And while you're at nationalbugle.com, read the articles, because they are put up there by Mark Dankoff, who is with us today. Mark, thank you so much for joining the show.
Well, it's always great to be with you and with the Republic Broadcasting Network on a Monday afternoon. This morning, of course, I was on UK Eurofolk Radio doing my Monday morning work on the show Generations, which I co-host, or try co-host, I should say, with both Andrew Carrington Hitchcock and Dr. Adrian Krieg. Those are names that will be very familiar to our RBN audience, I'm sure. And we interviewed Don Wassel today of the Nationalist Times. Don, of course, is one of the greatest newspapers in America, and along with the American Free Press, I'd have to say that those are, at least in my experience, the two best American nationalist anti-New World Order papers of the old print format that you can still get. And if you're interested in learning more about Don Wassel's end of things with the Nationalist Times, certainly that broadcast today with Andrew Carrington Hitchcock on the Generation Show will make people more familiar with Don, those who aren't already. And this marks, I believe, his second appearance with us, with Andy Hitchcock and with me and with Dr. Adrian Krieg. And the show goes very, very well when Don's on there. So that's something that our RBN folks, I'm sure, would enjoy.
And I got a few other they news would get items to it by mention. AndrewCarringtonHitchcock.com. Is that the best way to find it?
Yes. Now go to AndrewCarringtonHitchcock.com, and you will find all of his shows posted there, including the most recent, which is the interview that we did with Don Wassel today. So that's Don Wassel of the Nationalist Times, and that's a very, very good way to be introduced to his newspaper if you don't already take it. So at any rate, whether you're talking about the Nationalist Times or our old friends at the American Free Press, both of these publications really are fighting to stay alive in the environment in which we live, not just the political cesspool in which we live, but we have fewer and fewer people that actually read a substantive newspaper. There aren't too many that exist today. Mm-hmm. And certainly to find a substantive newspaper that is not a controlled publication, but that expresses the kinds of things that we express here at RBN, you're down to no more, perhaps, than two. Certainly the best two that I'm familiar with are the Nationalist Times and the American Free Press. So these guys keep fighting the good fight to keep those publications going and to keep them distributed in a day and an age when the political environment and the rise of internet communication has really hurt good, excellent print journalism. And that really shouldn't be the case, because it's been my experience, both with the Nationalist Times and also the American Free Press, I save as many of these editions as I can. The articles are excellent, and from time to time I can go back in the archives and find something that's not available on the internet that is very pertinent to something that I want to discuss with people on one of these shows right away.
Okay. Well, another place you want to look, it's not exactly a newspaper, but it is nationalbugle.com, which is a news amalgamation site, and I think it's very, very good, especially considering it's just the two of us, mostly you, and it's where you can find links to interesting articles, little pithy comments. If it was left up to me right now, it would wind up being kind of like a Tulsi Gabbard fan site. So I do have links to like her high-intensity workout and pictures of her surfing. And I think it really deserves to be more than just a Tulsi Gabbard fan site, so it's a good thing that you're putting articles up there on the big board. What do we have today to talk about?
Well, in fact, some of these things I will mention have actually been sent to Gabbard or to her campaign by me through Twitter. So hopefully they recognize that we're out there and that we're interested in covering at least one Democrat where there's anything at all positive to say, in contrast to virtually all of the rest of them running.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the only Democrat that I see that we can say anything at all positive about on the basis of what she has said about foreign policy, and that is a distinct contrast, not simply with all the other Democrats running, but it is a distinct contrast with much of what Donald Trump's team has been advising him to do when it comes to these wars in the Middle East. Speaking of that,
Can I just interject one thing here? So, you know, there's the foreign policy, which is what she talks mostly about, but there's really a considerable overlap between what she's talking about in 2019 and what Donald Trump, like what was his MAGA agenda during his election campaign. The emphases are different, but they were both against the Middle East wars. She's not hostile to Iran the way he was, though.
Yes, and I actually prefer her position on that. I don't think that the president's position on this is at all warranted.
Yeah, and
I agree with Pat Buchanan and David Stockman on that subject.
Right. And I just want to point out, she's called, actually, on the Dave Rubin show, called for building at least some wall, at least some border wall. It's not one of her emphases. That was his centerpiece, but he's gone nowhere with that. Let's see, improved relations with Russia. She's also pro-Second Amendment, at least for a Democrat, and Trump's nominally pro-Second Amendment, but he's wishy-washy on it. So a couple other things, and of course she's also not calling for Donald Trump to be impeached, unlike the rest of them. So there is some overlap on like their laundry list of positions, but the emphases are different. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to bring that
up. No problem. And I think in terms of Gabbard, I think her position on Trump and impeachment is well taken. I'll go on record in saying that the Democrats have not accepted the results of the 2016 election. They went nowhere with Russiagate. I think Ukrainegate is more of the same, aside from the fact that Joe Biden and his son are up to their eyebrows in criminal activities in the Ukraine, and that's something that I think John Solomon of the Hill has done an excellent job of covering, both as of about 6 months ago as well as more currently. So it is what it is. We'll keep an eye on that story of Ukraine. I did this past week on Twitter tell General David Goldfein, the Chief of Staff of the United States Air Force, what I thought of his wars that have nothing to do with true national defense.
His name is General... What?
David Goldfein, Goldfein.
That actually sounds Jewish, and you don't usually hear a lot of Jewish generals, at least in the American Army.
Yes, and there's been a considerable amount of publicity about Goldfein in that regard. I'll try to have some additional stories up on that this week. But nonetheless, I felt it important to say to the general, as he was doing some sort of a Twitter promotion for something that had something to do with the United States Air Force, that I felt he needed to take another look at whether or not these expeditionary wars were actually in the true national interest of the United States. And I believe I carbon copied that to Donald Trump and Mike Pompeo and to Lindsey Graham and a few other people of similar ilk. So that's something that people on the big board today at nationalbugle.com might want to take a look at. Here's a post from the Jerusalem Post. I'll just mention it in passing. People can read it at their leisure. Sigal Mandelker, who is the woman who is seizing Iran's money. Here is your Undersecretary of the Treasury for terrorism or dealing with terrorist entities, according to the U.S. State Department, in regard to economic sanctions and so forth. And she's very Jewish, and that's something that, of course, the Jerusalem Post goes into in regard to her background. Arguably, this is just one more evidence of what it is that we have been talking about for a long time in terms of the number of people in high places in the United States government that seem to have better Israeli credentials than they do American credentials. Mm. The Electronic Intifada has a good piece out there entitled "Elizabeth Warren Won't Stand Up to Israel's Crimes." That's a story that we need to not only put on the big board, but kind of file away, as it were, because as we get deeper into the actual Democratic primary process, as we get deeper into the campaign season in 2020, we may want to revisit that article as Warren.
And who wrote that article?
What's that?
Who wrote that article from Electronic Intifada?
Well, let's see. I'll go back and take a look at it here. Abu Nima.
Yeah, he runs that. That's his outlet. And I've met him before. He's a really decent guy.
Yes.
Of course, that's his issue, is Palestine. And I don't know, he's a decent guy, but I don't know how, for instance, like Donald Trump, who has been an abject, almost a disaster as a president, I don't want to be too tough on him, but he ran a good campaign, and I wonder if Ali Abu Nima was willing to give him any credit when he was running his campaign for, you know, wanting to end the wars in Syria and whatnot. I don't know. But so this article by Ali Abu Nima, what's the thrust of it?
Well, the thrust of it is that Elizabeth Warren has basically put forth policies on Palestine that resemble those of Barack Obama. We are told by Electronic Intifada about some of the specifics of why that statement is made. And then she flees hard questions, Mr. Abu Nima tells us, in regard to, as she did when confronted about Israel's massacre in Gaza in 2014. At best, he says, Warren's approach amounts to a return to Barack Obama's policy of enabling Israel's rampant crimes while paying lip service to peace. Two other things. She seems to support this quote-unquote two-state solution, which becomes increasingly hard to mm-hmm. implement as Israel keeps stealing more territory. Mm-hmm. And then she begins her conversation about the Palestinian-Israeli circumstance with what Abu Nima terms feel-good pablum, about how, quote, I believe in the worth and value of every Israeli and every Palestinian. And then as we read through some of the things that she doesn't say, and the fact that she lays out her foreign policy in a question and answer session with the Council on Foreign Relations, the CFR, should probably tell us everything that we need to know. So in this particular case, if she is nominated, and I suspect she might well be nominated, especially in the wake of Bernie Sanders having this unfortunate heart attack, mm-hmm. And I don't know how serious it is. Any heart attack is serious. I don't know on medical grounds if that should necessarily be a disqualifier to be running for president, but Bernie is, what, 74?
He's 78.
78?
Already.
I'm sorry,
he's 78 right now. He would be 79 going on 80 if he's elected and inaugurated.
Yes, and aside from the medical issue, just when you get into the perceptions of whether or not someone is medically capable of being president, there's no doubt that this will hurt Sanders. How badly it hurts him remains to be seen, but it is beginning to look like the Democratic presidential primary process could boil down to Warren on the one hand and Joe Biden on the other.
Although Joe Biden, I've been saying for a long time that I don't think he's going to, I don't even know he's going to get to Iowa. I don't think he's never gotten past Iowa.
And
yes,
he's
got a lot of vulnerabilities, not simply in terms of this Ukraine controversy and the Chinese controversy, but obviously Biden, without trying to hit the guy below the belt, he has slipped mentally. A lot of people have noticed it. He's made a lot of mistakes on the campaign trail that I think go beyond the mere fatigue level that all of these people have to contend with the schedules they have to keep. So Biden, if Joe slips badly in Iowa and in the initial stages of any primaries that follow the Iowa caucus, which is a caucus state, I believe,
yes,
Joe's going to be in a increasingly vulnerable circumstance. And with Bernie Sanders' health situation suddenly rising to the fore this last week, I'm beginning to think, especially since Kamala Harris has stepped back somewhat in the polls, that Warren might well at some point downstream be considered the open front runner, although that is premature.
I think realistically you got to look at her right now as being the front runner. If you look at third quarter fundraising, Bernie Sanders was on top with like maybe $27 million fundraising. Warren was about $24, $25 million. So she was right up there with him. And then Biden wasn't even in third place. And Buttigieg was in third place.
Yes.
And then Biden was way down there, you know, maybe only raising half as much as Warren. And what is Biden if he's not the, you know, the savior for the Democratic establishment? And if the Democratic establishment's not giving him money, he's not going anywhere. All he has right now basically is name recognition. He doesn't even have the deep pockets of the establishment. And the other people are going to get name recognition as this process unfolds. And so that advantage, initial advantage he had in name recognition, that's dissolving. His lead is dissolving. Bernie Sanders, maybe this health thing isn't going to push him out of the race, and then maybe he winds up, he may well be the chief beneficiary from Biden's demise. But if they were both, if both Biden and Biden and Sanders were to see their campaigns, you know, prematurely ended, yeah, Warren's the front runner. Harris, she was badly hurt by Tulsi in the July debate, if you recall, because she called Harris out on her hypocrisy of enforcing marijuana laws in California while joking about her own marijuana usage, and that really hurt her. And
yes,
we'll see. And of course, she's just very unattractive candidate. She's not that bright. She has a horrible voice, and then she pretends to be black when she's in front of black audiences, and she's not really black. Her father was Jamaican, her mother is from India, but she's not an American black. She doesn't share their experiences, and so she's fake black person. And so then who winds up being left? And actually, you've got Andrew Yang has been raising a lot of money, and some people are interested in him, and he is somewhat different. Tulsi Gabbard's not raising much money, but she's doing well in the polls in Iowa and New Hampshire. In fact, some polls in New Hampshire have her in fourth place ahead of everybody besides Sanders, Biden, and Warren. So we'll see what happens. I think it's going to be a roller coaster. You know, one thing that one phenomenon we haven't seen that much compared to 2016, 2012, it's the flavor of the month. So you remember, like, Trump was pretty much out in front the whole time, but 2012, but there were these flavors of the month. You had Carson was on top, actually even eclipsed Trump for a while, and, you know, you'd have 2012, you had, you know, all of a sudden Michelle Bachmann being in first or second place, or that black guy from the gangster pizza, whatever it's called, Godfather Pizza. And other people, Scott Walker would be, Brick Perry was the flavor of the month, and you'd have these people come up all of a sudden just like for a month be first or second in the polls and then just fall away. And we haven't seen too much of that, but I have the feeling Buttigieg and O'Rourke maybe early on were kind of like that. But let's go to the break now. We'll be right back.
Very good.
By mass media, it's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
The reviews for Extendivite are amazing. Here are some from Amazon. By Christine, great for heart palpitations. By Anne, before I started using this product, every afternoon, my ankles and my hands would be swollen. That doesn't happen anymore. So if that part of their advertising is true, I have to assume that the rest of it is also. Not to mention that when I had my yearly blood test, only a few weeks after beginning to use this product, my cholesterol had dropped over 30 points. I'm going to continue to take it. By Croc, I love this product. It really works. By Brad, works great, thank you. Tell us your story. Get your Extendivite today. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back to the show. So, Mark, back to the articles on the big board.
Yes, Business Insider has a very disturbing post on U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo.
What wouldn't be disturbing about him?
Attending a meeting.
Big gay Mike?
Yes. Attending a meeting linked to a terror cult, speaking of the Mujahideen-e-Khalq, M-E-K, also known as the MKO. Its front organization in the United States is the National Council of Resistance in Iran. Pompeo has attended their latest meeting. We are reminded in that Business Insider report that terror cult, the so-called Islamic Marxist Mujahideen-e-Khalq, assassinated six Americans in Pahlavi, Iran. I attended the funerals of two of the victims of the MEK, a Colonel Paul Schaefer and a Lieutenant Colonel Jack Turner, going back to May of 1975.
And they went after your father, right?
Yes, they did not get my father. Thankfully, but sadly enough, Colonel Turner and Colonel Schaefer were not as fortunate. But this is an interesting thing, not simply with Pompeo joining Rudolph Giuliani in a high degree of visibility with the MEK, but now subsequently we are told in a story that will go up in the big board at some point today that Michael Mukasey is signing on as some sort of a lobbyist for the MEK.
The former Attorney General, Jewish, actually Israeli, I'm pretty sure Israeli citizenship attorney, and I don't use that term lightly. I don't just call every Jew an Israeli citizen, but I'm pretty sure that his father was an Israeli citizen, and therefore, if your father or mother is an Israeli citizen, you have to enter Israel. If you go to Israel, you have to enter on an Israeli passport. There's something like that.
Yes, and so that's interesting once again to see the close link, the obvious link between the MEK, MKO, NCRI operation on the one hand and the Israeli Mossad and Saudi intelligence on the other. And, of course, there's a terrific amount of funding of the MEK that is now coming from the Saudi Arabians. But Israel has had close ties with the MEK for quite a number of years now. And this is quite fascinating to study all of this because the MEK-MKO organization, which was considered to be the avowed enemy of the United States in the Pahlavi era in Iran, later turned out to be a useful tool of American and British and Israeli and Saudi intelligence in all kinds of matters, ranging from helping Saddam Hussein in the Iran-Iraq war between 1980 and 1988, up to all of the murders and acts of terror that the MEK has undertaken within Iran from about 1981 onward. And that includes, in more recent years, the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists in Tehran, and a series of other activities related to bomb blasts and so forth, that suggest that MEK hands in these matters are hands that are being directed by outsiders. And the obvious outsiders, sadly enough, are the CIA, the Mossad, and Saudi intelligence. Speaking of the Saudi, Press Television and also The Sun in the UK tell us that the Saudi king's slain bodyguard may have quote-unquote had explosive dirt on Jamal Khashoggi's killers before being shot dead in a gunfight. That's definitely something worth keeping an eye on in regard to ongoing domestic instability in Saudi Arabia. At the same time, that the Saudis are encountering unexpectedly tough resistance from the Houthis in Yemen, not simply in terms of the highly publicized Aramco facility attacks in two different locations, but since that time, the Houthis have acquitted themselves well in several encounters that have taken place within Yemen that suggests that the Saudi military is in a great deal of disarray and dismay over the fact that the Houthis are proving to be far tougher than the Saudis imagined, for sure.
I want to ask a question. Yes. And by the way, I think I'm probably erroneously said Mulcahy was Israeli citizen. Maybe I'm mixing him up with Michael Chertoff. I think Mulcahy is an Orthodox Jew, a modern Orthodox Jew. But my question was, Saudi Arabia, so they do get huge amounts of American weaponry. Hillary Clinton had ushered through the largest weapons sale in the history of humanity, a $60 billion Christmas present, as she described it, to Saudi Arabia in 2012, while acknowledging in one of those leaked WikiLeaks email that it was in spite of the known Saudi support for ISIS. But the thing about the Saudis is, I know their government, I don't know about the military, but the government routinely has Pakistanis or other, non-Saudis do all the work. And a Saudi just shows up from time to time and, the minister or the vice minister and sips some tea and somebody else, a foreigner, is doing all the work for him. Is the military like that?
I can't speak to that because I have not been in Saudi Arabia. My father's last assignment in the aerospace industry after he left the Air Force was in Saudi Arabia. Okay. He's no longer alive.
And let's hold that thought and we'll be right back to the break.
Sure.
Yeah. You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Back to National People Radio. So I was just asking Mark Dankoff about the Saudi military. Is it as ineffective, or are the Saudi generals as lazy as the Saudi minister, you know, government minister counterparts?
Well, again, I'm speculating on this because my father never discussed too much of what he had been doing in Saudi Arabia. Years ago, he, in his last assignment with Lockheed, he was a logistical advisor to the Saudi Air Force. I do remember that he did not have a high opinion of the Saudis. He did tell me that he saw a lot of inefficiency from within. He frankly had a much better relationship with the Iranians when he had been working with their air force in the Pahlavi era than he did with the Saudis. And so from that vantage point, he did share a few things with me. But my impression, and it's an impression, it's a visceral impression of mine through what reading I have done and being an amateur Saudi watcher of sorts, my feeling is that what seems to be the increasing incompetence of the Al Saud family in running that country seems to be matched by a military that is absolutely being embarrassed in this situation in Yemen. When you consider all of the American weaponry that sadly has come their way, in all of the mass civilian death that the Saudis have caused in Yemen. This is a classic case of asymmetrical warfare, where the side that has all of the heavy, sophisticated military weaponry is running in mud, and to a point, I suppose you could make a comparison with the American effort in the Vietnam mm-hmm. War in the late 60s and early 70s. Mm-hmm. Certainly in this particular case, I would suspect that there would have to be a lot of problems with the military leadership in Saudi Arabia that would reflect much of the malaise that seems to be the case, certainly with the MBS regime, and even before bin Salman, some of these other elements in the Al Saud regime that would indicate that not all is well. One has the impression that other than having a terrific amount of money, these guys are having both domestic troubles as well as military troubles. And fascinatingly enough, I'm just wondering if their political and military leadership is beginning to wonder the same thing that we are told the Pentagon has begun to wonder, and that is whether or not either the United States or Saudi has any business tangling with Iran.
Right.
And in this particular case, I don't think either the United States or Saudi Arabia has any business on moral grounds and political grounds in launching an act of war, a war of aggression against that country. But even aside from moral considerations and political considerations as far as legitimacy goes, just militarily, one would have to say that if the United States has been running in mud in Iraq and in Afghanistan, if the neocons have been effectively countered in Syria, both by President Assad and also by the Russian military intervention, which was a timely one on behalf of the Assad regime, then one has to wonder what kind of success these Zionist neocons in the United States and, of course, the Israeli regime, and then these fairly incompetent-looking Saudis think they're going to achieve by going to war with Iran, which I think is going to surprise a lot of people with their military capabilities if they are attacked. And, of course, if you add Putin to this, if the Russians should decide that they would intervene on the Iranian side in the same way that they did in Syria, if there was an illegitimate war of aggression launched against Iran, that could be a real fascinating endgame for these neocon Zionist types and for the Al Saud regime in Saudi Arabia, as they not only would find Iran to be a far tougher opponent than they might have imagined, but at the same time, whether you're talking about Saudi Arabia or the United States, the domestic uprising that we might see in both countries, if the respective leadership of these two countries gets their nations involved in a military operation that absolutely blows up in their faces, this could bring about some real political instability both in Saudi Arabia and in the United States.
Yeah, well, I was just going to ask, and I guess you've already answered it, but the question was, you know, you look around the world, you look at, you know, recent decades of history, and it's really easy for countries to that are poorly run to fall into political instability. And you're finding our own country, which is on the brink of all sorts of instability. And then you think of Saudi Arabia, which is very, very poorly run. It's just that the leadership has all of this money. Now they're basically losing this war against their impoverished Yemeni's neighbor, or the Houthi element of that neighbor. And So here's a reframed question. Yeah, they couldn't survive a war with Iran. I think that's pretty clear, and I don't know if we could either. But can Saudi Arabia even survive this war with Yemen? Maybe that's a question.
I think it's a big question now, and as more information is getting out in social media about how horrific this war in Yemen is, with film reports and the horrible ravages of war as that has been visited by this Saudi American Israeli alliance in Yemen. These pictures are so reprehensible. The amount of victimization of children, the horrific character of what one sees in these films in regard to malnutrition and disease and war injuries. This is certainly an effort that is very unsavory, shall we say. And it's not only unsavory, but as this information is being disseminated around the globe in a way that was not even possible during the Vietnam War.
Yeah.
For example, putting this stuff on Twitter, is these war in Yemen. So in terms of the situation of domestic instability, both in Saudi and in the United States, at least as far as the Saudi model is concerned, their effort has been absolutely embarrassing, not simply in terms of the horrific character of their war crimes, but the fact that the Houthis have risen up and have attacked Saudi and Saudi oil refineries with capabilities that they were not deemed to have, and also as the Saudi war effort in Yemen proper continues to worsen, opening up potential floodgates for further retaliations on Saudi facilities in the Saudi homeland. This is the worst of all possible scenarios, it seems to me, for the Saudis, not only to be with all of this military equipment and all of this globally publicized billions of dollars in arms sales, chiefly from the United States, as well as from several other foreign powers, but chiefly from us. Lo and behold, all of a sudden, these guys are not getting the job done in terms of actually winning the war or subduing the Houthis in Yemen. But you could actually argue that on an asymmetrical warfare basis, they're losing, and losing in public opinion as well, because when you start looking again at these films that I'm getting from outfits like Stop the War in Yemen, and these come to me via one social media service, and then I put them on Twitter. I try to send these to some of our top military and civilian leaders in this country to say, hey, look, guys, this is not good. This is blowing up in our faces in terms of a level of publicity, complete with films and photographs of what it is that we have been supporting. That is absolutely unsupportable in terms of what the United States claims to stand for. And as the American public becomes increasingly aware of this dirty little war and becomes increasingly aware of the hazards of this political relationship that we have going with both Saudi Arabia and Israel, if you guys want to take this to the next level and attack Iran, all bets are off in terms of the way that that's going to be received, not only by the global community, but also by an American public that has been largely, sadly, passive since 9/11 and going along with all these military interventions. But this Yemen thing may be a prototype of things yet to come in regard to asymmetrical warfare and in regard to the embarrassment of the powers in the Middle East that have the most conventional weaponry, speaking of the United States and Israel and Saudi. But it begs the question, as badly as the American war effort has gone in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and in Syria, and with the mess that we made in Libya, boy, I tell you, we attack Iran and get some things handed to us, there might be no good military or political way out, and hopefully the Pentagon, from what has been coming out on antiwar.com every once in a while, and certainly the Saudi regime, perhaps is beginning to rethink the received wisdom about going to war with Iran based upon this this Yemen debacle.
Yeah. Hey, because earlier in this show I was doing what would you call it, crush posting on Tulsi Gabbard, because I have a crush on her. But did you see what I posted, her interview with Neil Cavuto of Fox News?
I saw the post. I have not watched the interview, but I know that she gave the interview.
So he was trying to, you know, call her out on she's been very critical of Saudi Arabia's war against the Houthis, right? And he's saying, well, you know, Iran's behind them. And she basically said, well, anything that's happening to Saudi Arabia by way of Yemen, they deserve, right? And he said, but Iran's a big threat to us. And she's saying, Iran's not a threat to us. Iran doesn't pose any direct threat to us. But Saudi Arabia does. And then he said, well, surely they're a bigger risk to us than Saudi Arabia. And she says, no, Saudi Arabia is a bigger threat. Saudi Arabia was involved in 9/11. That would have been nice if she brought in Israel. It's hard to expect an American politician to do that. But
well, that is something that I have mentioned repeatedly on several of these shows, including yours, I believe, Patrick, on RBN. Gabbard noticeably has not been using the I or Z word.
No.
The term Israel. Israel is not used. The term Zionism is not used.
No.
Everything has thus far been focused upon Saudi Arabia, and it's good that she's at least focusing upon that. But obviously, in terms of the situation of being against these globalist wars that have no viable moral and national security reason for being, at some point, I don't know when, at some point, the Israel and Zionist words are going to have to come into the picture, because to me it is clear that that the Israeli-Saudi alliance together, I believe, produced 9/11, and the Israeli-Saudi alliance, when it comes to wanting to attack Iran, is something that is going to have to be discussed publicly by Gabbard, in order that the American public can get the full picture on how and why we got into this mess to begin with in the Middle East. And there will come a time where when Gabbard is asked about Iran and the threat that Iran poses, she's not only going to have to feel that in terms of Saudi Arabia, but at some point, I believe she's going to have to discuss the entire history of the American-Israeli relationship, with all of these criminal activities that the government of Israel has directed against us as well.
Well, she may well at some point be asked point blank about Israel, and that's going to be interesting. And of course, she's had some bad votes as a congressperson, but you have to think that she knows what's going on. So here's another question. Let's just say you were a political advisor, and in all honesty, of course, we'd love to see people come straight out of the box and condemn Israel and its crimes. But realistically, if you think you have a shot at the presidency or at the nomination, and if you're going to be running hard for president, assumably you would think so. At what point in the campaign would you recommend, if she could dictate the timing, that she bring it up? Would it be, for instance, like immediately? Would it be when she's like at a point in the campaign where either she's got to, you know, breakthrough, or she's going to fall by the wayside? Would it be in, assuming she gets the nomination, would it be in a debate with Trump, a general election debate? What point do you think would be, realistically, would be the point to start talking about Israel?
I think she's in the identical position that Ron Paul was in when he was running for president. In the Republican presidential primaries, in that key moment when Rudolph Giuliani challenged Ron Paul on this whole question of 9/11, and what Congressman Paul had indicated was the blowback from American foreign policy. Now, it seems to me that Congressman Paul, I believe at that time, that may have been his, and I believe it was his moment to take the deep breath and to say, let me tell you what caused 9/11. Let me tell you what I think was behind 9/11. Let me tell you what the whole history of this has been prior to 9/11. And let me tell you where I think we are going as a country if we continue to go down this road of internationalist wars, especially in the Middle East. If Ron Paul had gone for broke at that particular point.
Meaning named Israel.
Naming Israel, naming the Zionist entity, getting into who really did 9/11, mentioning some of these other Israeli crimes against the United States that have been concealed from the people of this country by and large by mainstream media. If Paul had seized on that moment, it would have resulted in a situation, I think, where it would have potentially given him the boost that his campaign needed. As it was, he didn't do that, and he never got another chance. So at some point, Gabbard, I think, is going to have to do the same thing.
And it might not be at a time of her choosing either. Okay,
that's right.
We'll be right back.
OMG! People are jumping on board to the Life Change Tea Regiment. Brew, steep, and drink for a gentle, taste-great cleanse. It's changing how they feel. See what everybody's talking about. Log on to GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Life Change Tea aids in digestive slowdown and helps people get moving down a healthy path. We won't make claims. We'll just let you decide. Experience is much better than a commercial anyway. If you want results, log on to GetTheTea.com and purchase your Super Strength Cleansing Tea. You won't be disappointed. And if you're looking for some mind-body suggestions, go to YouTube and punch in the search bar Health Matters Now. That's Health Matters Now. Put power into your health now. So, GetTheTea.com, that's GetTheTea.com for Super Strength Tea, and YouTube, Health Matters Now. That's Health Matters Now for valuable suggestions. GetTheTea.com, the tea that makes you go.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
And we are back at National Bugle Radio with Patrick Slattery and Mark Dankoff. So, Mark, how about some of the other stories that our listeners can find on nationalbugle.com?
National Interest has one. If Mike Pence becomes president, the neocons will stage a comeback. A lot of implications to that story. Breitbart, of course, tells us that a teacher has been fired for refusing to use transgender pronouns, and that teacher has since sued. the NRA in San Francisco. We are told by RT.com that San Francisco has backed off of blacklisting the NRA as a national terrorist organization after the gun group takes the city to court. Hats off to the NRA. I hope that more of that continues when it involves threats to liberty, to the Second Amendment of the Constitution, or when it comes to teachers being able to effectively resist the transgender cultural Marxist agenda that has now infected public education in this country. We've got some additional items up there. John Bolton's Revenge Tour. That's courtesy of the American Conservative. Two plots that Press Television mentions that are well worth taking into account in regard to subversion of that country. The Islamic Republic Guard Corps reports that they have foiled an Arab-Israeli plot to assassinate General Soleimani. Soleimani is of course, the head of the Islamic Republic Guard Corps. And there has since been, as we are told, an attempt that was made on the life of the chief Shia cleric in Iraq. In that instance, Press Television tells us that Iraqi forces have foiled a plot to assassinate the top Shia cleric there in conjunction with this apparent plot that was thwarted that would have involved assassinating General Soleimani, the head of the Islamic Republic's Guard Corps. That is worth watching in regard to MEK and MKO activities. Some of this could conceivably involve Al-Qaeda and ISIS as well. So let's keep an eye on that situation just to see what might transpire. Israel-Palestine News reports that the United States is cracking down on a $10 billion Israeli scam that steals life savings. Our old friend Whitney Webb at Mint Press News continues to follow the Epstein story. She now has written a piece about how a former Israeli intelligence official has claimed openly that Epstein and Maxwell worked for Israel. I think that was all but assumed, but that's still an interesting story in terms of someone going on the record who is a former open public intelligence official in Israel. Mint Press News also covers the White Helmets, the Hamas systems, and the militarization of humanitarianism in Syria. I, from time to time, like to irritate the White Helmets and other front groups by sending them these materials via Twitter. But that's an interesting one from Mint Press News. RT.com reports that there is a doctor who has spoken out after a tribunal has ruled that the Bible is incompatible with human dignity, and that, of course, gets back...
In Britain, in Great Britain, which is nominally a Christian country, with the Queen, the head of state, also being the head of the church.
Yes, and this is interesting that this doctor... whose name is Dr. David McAreth, was fired from his job at the Department for Work and Pensions, DWP, after telling his manager that in a hypothetical scenario, he would never, quote, call any six-foot-tall bearded man madam. The Birmingham Employment Tribunal sees it differently. They support the government department's right to sack McAreth, and they have stated that the doctor's biblical beliefs have no place in British society. Quote, belief in Genesis 1:27, lack of belief in transgenderism and conscientious objection to transgenderism, in our judgment, are incompatible with human dignity and conflict with the fundamental rights of others, unquote.
Hey, speaking of six-foot-tall bearded women that you would call madam, Bin Laden, when he supposedly ran away from Afghanistan, yeah. He was dressed up like a woman, and he was about 6'4" and had a long beard. So I wonder if he would be...
I understand for the longest time he was going around, he went to a plastic surgeon, and he had the surgeon disguise him as Pete Buttigieg.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all we have time for today. Well, okay. It wouldn't be a National Google Radio show without a Buttigieg joke. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and we always look forward to having you on. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Google Radio.
Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.